I've talked to crazy executives, huge investors, by just being a real human and just not asking, hey, I need to get this or that from you. My message to you is just like, I love what you're doing and it's incredible.
I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show, and I'm so excited to have Sean Holliday here. Very, very excited. Sean,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, super excited. Sean had actually reached out to me through LinkedIn and, of course, is a fan of Hint. So, I mean,
of course. Oh, long fan.
So excited to hear from him. But then the more that we started going back and forth and I started looking a little bit more into Space Station, I was really excited to have him on the show.
I think I had just messaged you and said, thanks for just creating a great product that I appreciated and loved. And then it turned into like, wait, maybe you should come on the show. And now we're here.
Yeah, no, exactly. I loved it. And I loved some of the video that I saw of you and some of the other interviews. So it's super cool. So Sean, as I mentioned, is he has two Seans in the company, which we'll talk about. So Sean Holliday here, we're talking to the co-founder of the Space Station. He's based in Utah. And for those listeners that don't know Sean, he's just this awesome entrepreneur who's truly killing it. And he's also an angel investor. He's a dad of four boys. So
I got a girl coming in May.
Oh, you're kidding. Congratulations. Yeah. I was the last of five. Did you know that?
There you go.
So no. Yeah. So I was, I can tell you all about being the fifth kid. So, and, or tell your daughter. And
yeah, I was four or five. So I know kind of right there at the range.
That's awesome. Very, very cool. So he's the business and the brand star you all need to know about. And, Space Station integrations and Space Station gaming have everything from talent management, influencer marketing, gaming, and business development, and just super, super cool. So we're going to hear it all
get
from Sean
it.
Right now.
Yeah, let's get into it.
So living in Utah, but where did it all begin?
So yeah, I mean, I'll go back a little bit. I'm actually from Arizona, as well as you are.
You're kidding.
No, so I was born and raised in Sholo. So
northeast. I know where Sholo is.
Yep. So Lakeside Eager.
Little town, but it's awesome.
So I was born and raised there, and my mom she just barely sold it about a year and a half ago. She owned a Dairy Queen. And so we grew up obviously with my mom owning a Dairy Queen, and then my dad started two air medical companies. So like helicopters pick you up on the road, take you to the hospital. So growing up, I, you know, learned and knew all about just running your own businesses and hiring and firing and scale. And, you know, in the air medical businesses, it's heavy capital. So it's raising money and it's, you know, having partners. And so I grew up constantly learning about and just being in the environment of having to put the work in, and the buck stops there. Right. If my mom didn't wake up and she didn't make sure that the payroll was paid and that the building's lights and open the doors, you know, we didn't make money. So that was kind of really like the genesis of and where I had this like interest in creating my own piece of the world, like creating my own environment.
That's so awesome.
So that was, back in, you know, Sholo. And then fast forward several years, obviously later. Yeah, started in, it's 2009. I'd come off my mission. So I served in Honduras with, later the story will make sense, with Sean Duras, my business partner, Sean McBride. So we had met there. But between 2009 and 2016, I had done, I mean, this is horrible time in the economy, right? So I do debt collect. First, I do telemarketing. Then I step up to debt collecting. Then from debt collecting, I run a janitorial company. And that was the first taste of kind of real logistics and real growth potential, was running this janitorial company. We had like 50 locations. This is all in Arizona, like Arizona Biltmore, the Fairmont Princess, like locations that I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
And so we're just handling the cleaning of kind of the common areas there. And so I really learned how to, you know, we had 120 employees. And so I really just learned how to like make sure that locations were taken care of and follow up with the managers of those locations, make sure they were happy. And so I was like, wait, this wasn't my company. I just worked for another guy. And I was just like, wait, this is, there's something here. And I could see how I could scale it and do better and more. And we were doing that together. From there, I started my own company. So this is now like 2013. Realized that I had just more, me and my brother had kind of thought of this idea called crowd mics. So it would turn your phone into a microphone in a live event. And so I was in nursing school. My brother was working in commercial real estate, Tim, and he, we both said, let's just throw everything we've got and try to make this work. And so we threw literally all of our money. I'm a poor student. Like, this is my wife's money, by the way. So we throw all the money she had saved up. Tim saves, throws his money in, and we get this app developed that literally, imagine being in a room of 200 or 300 people. You talk into your phone and it comes over the sound system. And we're the first novel of its kind. We're like, we're groundbreaking. So fast forward, we ended up raising money out of Silicon Valley, like $1.6 million on a seed round. And so that gets going.
You're in Arizona at this point.
Like in a garage with like a little air conditioning unit in Arizona, Mesa, Arizona. And that was really the breakthrough of when I realized that, one, there was so much more opportunity in the world than I thought. Mm-hmm. And two, that it didn't take a, like this, I thought it was always just this wizard person that had learned all these things. Like, I had founded a company with my brother, both of us totally normal dudes with no previous experience in the specific turning a phone into a microphone, which had never existed. And all of a sudden we're the thought leaders and we have influence and we're winning awards and we're raising money. And it just clicked that like, wait, I can kind of do whatever. Honestly, like I can create things and people will react to those. And there's groups of people that love this. And we found that out by pitching hundreds of people, and some of them would get really excited of them. Some of them didn't care at all. And that was when it really opened up my eyes. And so we went on to sell that to Byamp, that crowd mics. We sold that to Byamp. And then it was like, okay, what's next? And that's really where, now it's December of 2016. That's where it gets started with the space station. So that's the backstory. Now we're here at the space station. Do you want me to give like a high level of what the space station is now?
Yeah, so talk about
now?
Space station. And how did you get that idea? And going from mics that turn into mega amps and amplifiers and I don't know if that's the right term or not, but what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, one to many, taking one microphone and everybody could hear you. So I came up here for like a week to meet with Sean, my co-founder, and we were just trying to see if this thing could work. And at the time, Sean was the biggest Snapchat account in the world. So he had figured out, and he didn't have enough famous friends or cousins, didn't live in LA, he lived in Utah. He just found that Snapchat was just this land grab, right? It's 2014 when he started. So by 2016, he had amassed this following by just making really kind of creative, fun Snapchats. And his were doodles. So he would make these really fun, great doodles. He had been on like American Idol in the audience where Seacrest comes up. He does this like cool custom thing. He was on the Forbes 30 under 30. He was all this stuff that he just created by just putting it in the world and saying like, I'm the Snapchat guy. So by now he had had YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, and he had had a little team of four or five people here that were just kind of creating this really media, YouTube videos. So I came up a couple days, I see there's a roadmap, this thing could get bigger. We could just do bigger brand deals and, you know, hyper-focus in and consulting. Sean was just a really great marketer and man, there's something here. So when I came up the first 3 months, we just went really heads down on the Shonduras brand. And we ended up working and doing a consulting deal with Viacom and Taco Bell. And we worked with Century 21 and Subaru and Xfinity and Tilly's. And we just, it was this roller coaster for 3-4 months. And then we realized that the inventory of scale was one guy. It all depended on Sean. If he got hit by a bus, we're in trouble. If he got sick for a couple of days, production went way down and revenue followed it. And so we realized by about March, April, that it was time to figure out another way to scale. Cause we both had a lot of ambition. We were, yeah. It was great. The revenue was there, but we wanted to like really rocket ship. So intuitively looked around and said, if we could do it with Sean's brand in that way, could we do it with other influencers? And so the very first kind of outside of Sean influencer was a kid named Tanner Fox. And he's like an action sport athlete, a vlogger. And at the time he was 17 years old and didn't have any management, didn't have anybody really on his team. So we met him and I just said, hey, I think I can bring you some opportunities that you otherwise wouldn't get. And I'd want to take a cut of it, Sean and I, right? And I think we can help you. And he's like, yeah, please. Like, I thought it was going to be way harder and I was all ready to like pitch him. And he's like, yeah, go for it. So we pick up Tanner Fox. At the time he had about 2 million subscribers. He now has 10 on YouTube. Then the next talent was in May. We picked up a guy named Peter McKinnon. So he was a photographer, really strong kind of storyteller. And at the time he had 300,000 subscribers. He now has 5 million. So these are the first two guys that we just happened to start working with that were both on these just rocket ships. So June of 2015, we founded Space Station Integrations, which was an influencer marketing agency. We founded Space Station Gaming, which is a competitive esports company. The Shonduras brand kept growing and kind of we were keeping that going with videos and content. So now fast forward. So this is June of 2017. Fast forward. Space Station Integrations has done deals with Hot Wheels and a sold out show at the Staples Center and a backpack that we had created. We even did work with Hint back in the day with Nick Sharma. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've worked with this just vast, big group of brands and incredible creators. And so that's now, you know, grown. The internal team's about 15 people. You know, we've done tens of millions of dollars of revenue through, you know, which is cool because we get to pay these creators a ton of money and these brands get these great case studies and growth and revenue. And so that company's done really, really well. Like last year we did 14 million. This year we'll probably do 20 to 25 million in revenue. So that started going. Space Station Gaming, we wanted one of these two companies to work. Mm-hmm. They both worked. So Space Station Gaming, fast forward, we won a world championship in Rainbow Six Siege. We're number three, top three in the world in Rocket League. We've got a Valorant team. We've got a Smash. So all of a sudden, we became this force in the gaming scene where, yeah, we really had a different style, you know, very family friendly. We wanted it to be focused on, you know, great original content that our team was creating. And so, yeah, Space Station Gaming now has an incredible, you know, community. We've won some world championships. It's got this just really, really great momentum to it. And then size-wise, we've got about 60, 70 gamers and streamers, and then about 20 to 25 internal staff that are on that company. I'm almost done. And then I want a bunch of questions from you. I'm not trying to take over just talking the whole time.
No, I love it. It's yours. All yours.
So then we kept doing the Shonduras brand over those, you know, that 3.5-4 years. It started a second channel called A for Adley, which was just about having fun and educating kids. It was Sean's daughter, Adley, in the content. And it was really just Sean and Adley having fun and storytelling and teaching good principles of eating healthy and doing your chores and, you know, and having fun. And between those two channels, we do about 250 to 300 million views a month.
Insane.
So those just
where generally
all YouTube,
all on YouTube,
yep, all on YouTube. And so those really, really picked up, which was phenomenal. And then in July of 2019, we invested in our first outside company because this was all self-funded. So we've never taken on any investors. We have no, you know, board. The board is me and Sean. And so we'd self-funded all of this. And in July of 2019, a friend named Chris Bennett reached out and said, hey, I've got an opportunity for you guys to invest in a company. We're like, wow, we don't need to invest. We have so much going on here. Like, why would we invest? Yeah. Like angel invest in a company. He said, it's called Magic Spoon. Right. It sounds cool. And he's like, it's high protein cereal, keto friendly, low sugar, no sugar. We're like, that sounds great. I mean, we all love cereal. So we invested in Magic Spoon, didn't touch any other angel stuff, went back to work. July of 2020, comes back, Magic Spoon has grown exponentially, and they're offering to let us in this the follow-on round. And we're like, 100%, that's insane. Like, we had been working with them throughout the year doing their influencer, and so we were really stoked. So we invested in July of 2020 in Magic Spoon again. And then from about September till now, we've invested in about 32 other companies. So it's about one a week. And so we've just been incredibly active on the angel investment. A lot, some of them are just a cool story that we believe in and just want the founders to have a chance. Some of them are really well-known companies like Olipop or Koya, or let's see what some Oats Overnight, Slate Milk, Via Customer, Ayoba, Canopy. I mean, the list goes on. And so we found ourselves in this little food mogul spot where we were investing in these incredible fast-growing foods. And so now, yeah, the team's about like 70, 75, and then 60 streamers and gamers, so about like 130, 140 on payroll. And yeah, we're not slowing down. I mean, things are looking up and doing really, really well, which is fun. And I'm on this podcast with you, which is great.
Where do you spend the most time between all of those companies?
I spend probably the majority of my time with Sean on kind of trying to build our leaders here, mm-hmm. so that that's how scale would ultimately happen, is making sure that they're all confident and can make decisions, and that, you know, we're infusing the culture and the sauce, is what we call it, of the space station. And then outside of that, I talk to probably 4 to 6 founders a day at all levels, doing 100 million in revenue down to launching their first product, you know, in the next quarter. And that's where we source a lot of our investments, client work, just friends like you. I like to just learn from incredible people. So I spend quite a bit of my time there. And then, yeah, just across the whole thing, a lot of time with Sean. Sean and I spend quite a bit of time together just looking at the roadmap.
So Social Boom, I mean, obviously the other Sean and Snapchat understands that platform, you know, very, very well. How do you think, and you've introduced so many brands as well to social media as a whole, how do you think that has changed over the... I mean, I don't even know what data. I mean, you said he's been on Snapchat since 2014. And is that when Snapchat started?
It started earlier, a little bit earlier, but that's where, yeah, he had really picked up and figured out that it was time to double down and make something out of this. I think not the biggest change, but I think one thing that we've realized and try to teach the industry is that it's a massive, massive market. Everybody's on social in some degree, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's Instagram, YouTube, nowadays Stereo or Clubhouse, or there's one popping up. It used to be, you know, Meerkat and Periscope, if you remember. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's just been this evolution constantly of platforms and places to go, but there's always humans and lots of humans there. What we found is you can find now these really niche, incredible communities. Mm-hmm. So instead of saying, I want to put paid ads to the world, and if they could just see my product, I know they'll convert. You can say, I know for a fact that women 25 to 45 have an affinity for my product. I want to talk to them. Then you can say, I really love them when they're more keto focused. So now you can go and find a YouTuber who has keto, you know, followers that are focused on women 25. And it's like, you can get so specific, and you'd be surprised. There is a community for every single thing. A watch so community, true. A headphone community, a shirt community, a microphone community. So you just go in, and they might be small, might be 10,000 people. And then you can find the, you know, right now, Logan Paul and Pokemon. It's this multi-million of people focused on Pokemon cards and trading and finding Charizards and that whole world. So you can go really, really broad, or you can go incredibly narrow. That's probably the biggest focus we try to help clients with and individuals realize that, like, stay niche, find your pocket of what you're good at, and there's people there.
And also, I just think you touched on community. I mean, I think it's interesting. I launched my book in late October, and people in the book industry or other authors kept saying to me, just get on podcasts. And I said, oh, what podcasts? And they'd say, oh, go get on Tim Ferriss's podcast. And I was like, okay, Like, give me his phone number, right? I mean, it was just, you know, I just didn't know sort of how to do that, right? Or certain, you know, a few others that were mentioned. And so then people would say, well, it's not Tim Ferriss's podcast, but it's somebody else's podcast. And that is a friend of mine, or I can get you hooked up or whatever. So I would take those intros and then I would get on these podcasts. Anyway, the net of it is between September 15th and the end of the year, I was on 240 podcasts.
Oh my.
And I think you and I met in the midst of that whole thing. And I was just like, I mean, it was crazy town, right? And anyway, I got on Wall Street Journal bestseller list, Amazon bestseller, all of the stuff. And people are now asking me how I did it. And I think it has everything to do with exactly what you are just talking about. And, you know, podcasts are not social media, but it's these small communities. And for me, it was a way too, where initially my publisher, when I was launching my book, they said, okay, look, entrepreneurs are definitely going to love your book, but it's really fascinating the feedback that I've been getting back from CEOs who are hearing me talk about in the book, for example, that I found the beverage industry. And it wasn't that I wanted to become a beverage executive. I actually was going through my own sort of health issues and getting off of Diet Coke. And so it was something that I was passionate about. I mean, people always talk about, you know, when you have kids, like you start to think about things. It's just, again, I think when you fall into these things that you're super interested in, and all of a sudden you've got these ideas for a business, a lot of people don't like take that next step.
But there's purpose there, right?
Right.
Meaning your purpose was, I want to get off Diet Coke, so I'm going to find the solution. I don't have all this, you know, knowledge. You're just industry expert. You worked at AOL before. You didn't work at Coca-Cola. Right. So it's like, it was finding that solution. I think that's one, what the communities look like. They're really focused in on wanting to learn how to play Settlers of Catan, or they're really focused in on trying to learn where Tom Brady goes from here and talking about sports, right? It's like, that's that same energy and that same focus you bring to, you know, your workplace, wherever you're working at, or if you're founding a company, you bring that kind of focus and specific energy to solving that problem or being a part of that community as a whole.
Well, and so what is interesting about it is that, so the person who was interviewing me for these podcasts, let's say, for example, that it had nothing to do with entrepreneurism. Let's say I was on a podcast for type 2 diabetics. Yep. And now type 2, our product is great for people with type 2 diabetes, but they view that product as theirs, right? Or, you know, they view Hint because I'm in there talking about my book and why I founded the company, et cetera. But again, when I say to them, have you ever heard of this podcast that is based on like this guy, David Novak, who does a podcast on CEOs of companies? And I mean, they're very, very different audiences. Yet when you're speaking to that audience, then they think it's theirs. There's some kind of ownership in it. And I guess it's the same with this. It's the exact same thing with social. And so anyway, the net of it is that I've got, you know, the publisher now who wants me to like disclose strategy around how I made all this happen. I'm like, I don't know. I'm still kind of gelling. Right? I mean, do you hear what I'm saying? Like, it's just 100%. Why did it work? Yep. And I think it really goes to what you just talked about the influence of these small audiences. And when you're a brand or you're a book or whatever, you show up in those environments, then they jump on it.
People don't count the one community, but they don't count the focus and energy in the old one-to-one of like your best customers as referral and comes from some. We just want the virality.
Yeah.
Immediately we just wake up and just, I want my video to be at 1 million views and this is going to get shared so many times. Truly, not necessarily. Like finding and converting against people that are passionate, the type 2 diabetes, that say, this is our thing and we'll tell everyone we meet why we love it so much, more than just the person that casually passes by, maybe even buys it once or gets it handed to them at a sampling. It's like somebody who's willing to invest and see it and love it and tell, like my mom, who talks about it constantly and tells everybody how much she loves it. she's a true advocate of the brand and she has influence, right? Totally. Her influence just isn't the influence Shonduras has to hundreds of millions of people, but her influence is to those around her that take it very much to heart. And so, yeah, I think this new social focus is around, you know, niche communities that really can help you even figure out the voice of your product more than you think in your head, or, you know, that you imagine or want it to be. They can actually kind of just help you dictate what it actually is. Like, this is how we see what your product
is. Yeah. It's super, super interesting. So I love that. Now you're going to keep me up tonight, like thinking about this stuff. Cause it's,
and the podcast stuff that you did was incredible, because I think that just proved that if you can do it at scale, there's no one too small or big. They weren't just, I was on Gary V's and Tim Ferriss and Joe Rogan. It's like, I was on random this person's and that. To do 200 plus podcasts, there had to be some.
And I'm still doing them. And it's interesting. Well, here's the other piece of this that I think is so fascinating, is that we sent everybody a code and said, you know, when you post the podcast, say, hey, go pick up Kara's book. And so we're sending them to Amazon to go, or wherever to go buy the book. And, but it's interesting how these smaller, very focused communities, where people actually know why they're showing up for the type 2 diabetes community or whatever, versus these broader ones, the bigger name podcasts that I was on, I hate to tell you, they didn't sell as many books.
Yeah.
And it, because people are just showing up because they think, oh, I got to go on and listen to this person, because that's what lots of people are doing. So they may have bigger audiences, but do they transact?
Yeah.
And
And with the real, like, whoa, home run is when you have a big audience, that trend, that's when it's just game over. But I think there's strength in, you know, really kind of figuring out and focusing on what that community and what the return and kind of call to action power is, you know, of those people. And I'm a true believer too of building your own, you know, influence, right? And building and focusing on your brand, that content that you produce 200 and something times on podcast can be resurfaced into LinkedIn posts and into Instagram posts and into all this incredible stuff, not just for promotion or it's just storytelling of what you're doing and what's important to you. I think that goes underrated, you know. I think people don't spend as much time as they
should.
And
I think we do a lot of it, but I totally agree with you. I think that it's just not even, I mean, even this conversation that we're having right now, I mean, I'm sure my team will come back. They'll be like, wait a minute, back up on this. Like, you haven't talked about this stuff. So it's, you know, it's so interesting. So somebody said to me the other day, just because I know YouTube, we have not at Hint paid a whole lot of attention to our YouTube. So, I mean, don't even go there, because it's really, somebody said to me the other day, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it's the second largest search engine.
Yeah. Google is the second. I mean, when you think about it, obviously Google's number one, Google owns YouTube. In the search, if you were to look up something right now, Hint Water, it would show the top results, and then it'll usually show that middle section of videos. Mm-hmm. If you want to,
know,
visually see what they're talking about. So then people click into there, or people just go to straight up YouTube and type in how to do this, or water that's calorie free. And, you know, they'll search as if they were searching Google to just see what content is there around it. Yeah. I mean, we've seen tons and tons of traffic pushed through there. Specifically, that's why you got to have the strategy on the other end to make sure you're capturing that, much like the SEO for your website and blog posts and all that. We do very much the similar thing in our description of our YouTube videos, where we're trying to target and make sure that, you know, no matter how you search us, you're going to find, you know, the Shonduras and Adley brands and Space Station Gaming, and then our partner, you know, influencers we work with, you know, giving them that strategy to focus and say, this is a search engine. Let's make sure that we're in that top, you know, 3 to 5 videos when people find us.
I think so many people forget about that. And I think it's definitely something that, you know, I think, as I was saying to a person interviewing me earlier today, I said, you know, I think that the thing that I've realized about being an entrepreneur, and I think you obviously participate or agree with this as well. It's like the puzzle never ends, right? You just keep, you know, you just keep adding on to it. And it's just, I think what would frustrate the average person who maybe wants to get the puzzle and the picture and they want to solve it. And it's just, you just keep adding on. I mean, that's the fun. And if you don't have that mindset, then the stuff will make you nutty.
There's a challenge every day. Cause like your guys' website, beautiful. Your retail approach and the doors you're in, insane. And then you're like, but our YouTube, like, don't go look at it. It's like, then now you know 2021's got to be a focus on making longer form content that tells a brand story and convert. You know, it's like there's always something that we can all kind of learn and focus on. The same in our personal lives. I can drink less soda. I can exercise more, spend more time with my family, you know, do better and more productive at work. It's, I think life, it's just a constant kind of moving target that we just have to constantly adjust to and figure out.
I think it's so true. So TikTok, are you like, where do you see brands on TikTok these days?
It's interesting. TikTok is incredibly viral, right? It has just this crazy element of reach and exposure. We haven't seen the conversion there, right? The call to action isn't strong in a swipe up or a click because it just doesn't exist. You have to click out, go to their, you know, kind of handle, you know, page, click out of their bio to then get to the thing. So we don't see a ton of like immediate call to action. However, it's really great brand recognition and just kind of brand, you know, top of funnel approach, brand awareness. And we're seeing brands that have grown significantly on there that's driving traffic over to other channels, whether that's Instagram, driving traffic to their YouTube or to their website, you know, based off of kind of the content that they're creating. And then you'll see some like the, you know, Cranberry, whatever it was,
with the guys, you know,
Ocean Spray. It's like you'll see some of these pops where all of a sudden it brings them back into the light they haven't otherwise been in. TikTok, though, is just you throw literally, you know, YouTube, you're throwing a very dialed in, curated piece of content that your audience expects 10 to 20 minutes of just really focused, good content. TikTok, you could throw 20 TikToks up a day. Mm-hmm. And one of those will go viral and do well. And the other ones, nobody even like scrutinizes you or cares. It's just like, it's there. And they just kind of look over it and look for the one that's like really, really great. And so I think the approach is just more spray and pray. And then when it goes and you get the traffic and capture it, but you're not, it's not quite as, I'm not discrediting anybody creating TikToks. We have tons of creators that create TikToks. Just more the approach is just go.
Yeah.
Just scroll, which creates this environment of just more volume than curation. So as a brand, we're seeing brands spend there. We've spent plenty of money there with brands. We spent tons of time there creating content. Yeah, it's fast paced. It's viral. I think you've got to keep up with it. And you got to stay. It's not dancing. People think it's dancing. No. It's very little of what the platform is. It's just kind of got that from the beginning because of the D'Amelios and some others, but yeah, it's not.
Yeah. It's actually interesting for, I just started going on TikTok and I'm certainly not dancing. I more did it just because I was curious about it, satisfying my curiosity. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting talking about repurposing some content. Some of my talks that I've done, well, we're taking like 15 second clips and we're talking about being an entrepreneur. That's my focus on there and about just building a company and just little things along the way. And
it'll go.
And a few of them have gone viral. And actually, what I think is so interesting for me as a CEO is that my core audience is not the Gen Zers, right? Yet that's who's there. And they're finding me and they're saying,
and they're learning
and they're learning totally.
And,
I didn't know, I knew that they were in a house where their parents were buying our product at Target or Whole Foods or whatever, but I didn't know how to reach them. And I'm actually reaching them right now. And it's super, I mean, as a leader, it's just, I'm curious. I'm super interested in it. So
it's because I think we always think we have to speak to the demo that we're at. It's like, oh, okay, how do I be like relatable and super cool on TikTok? No, you need to speak to the platform, which the platform short form, very quick you know, nuggets and pieces of, you know, whether that's somebody falling, it's got to be right at when they fall, not 20 seconds of it building up and just random. And then all of a sudden they fall. It's like, they just want the very short buildup to get the context. They want the fall and then they're going to move on. So you need to build to the platform, but don't change your tone of voice because you want to be the aspirational piece there. You want to be the female founder that they can look up to and try to be one day. And so I think there's a difference, and this goes for all platforms, but I think you feed into the platform's needs. You're not totally going to make you know, an incredibly short video for YouTube. It's a longer form play, unless you're doing a YouTube short. But traditionally, it's like, it's a long form play. Your audience on Facebook, it's a completely different style. Your TikTok can't be, one, it just can't be long form because they won't allow it, but you need to feed into that like wow moment explosion to get people, you know, to stay around and keep scrolling through what you're doing. So yeah, I don't think it's a change of content or style. I think it's just a molding to the platform specifically.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. So in building all of these brands, so you probably had doubters along the way who are like that, you know, phone amp megaphone thing, it's never gonna work, you're never gonna get funded, you're, you know, now you're gonna get into the esports. I mean, I'm sure you had the doubters along the way. I mean, how do you deal with that, and how do you kind of continue having this trying attitude?
I think it takes you know, a village. And for me, I was so fortunate the entire time to have incredible co-founders. I don't take that for granted. The first one being my older brother, right? In crowd mics and in the microphone, you know, and that he was just this, always I looked up to him my whole life. And he was just this, you know, character that I wanted to be. And so when we got into business together and we're going down that road, that very much the trust, obviously being my brother and the desire for us both to make something work was very, very strong. But then finding Sean, my current co-founder, and not having obviously like blood brother, but having this trust and this appreciation for each other and this overall goal to make each other's lives just better and funner and more sustainable. And then now being fortunate to make the lives of other people sustainable and fun, and, you know, having the, giving those freedoms that we always wanted, you know, when we were trying to work for someone else or trying to build a great company with other people. So I think for me, you know, the doubters and the haters, and we failed a lot. We always talk about all these successes and this and that. We had three or four or five different things that just completely flopped and didn't go. We tried a shoe company, a toothbrush company. We tried a media company with TikTokers in a house. Like, we tried a bunch of things that didn't pan out and just didn't quite go. But the whole time it was constantly being able to look at the guy, you know, for us, for me as a guy, Sean, but look at the person next to you and say, let's keep going, man. We got this. We can do this. Like, that's just a bump. We just got to stay positive and work harder and figure it out. And so all of the hate and all those kind of just those naysayers always came. The actual roadblocks, whether it was financial or time, or, I mean, me and Sean were today looking through, we actually had have somebody that we just hired that is like building the history of the space station from Sean's Snapchat to now. It's like currently like 180 pages, which is cool. But we were kind of going through this today and just remembering like all night trips, you know, literally going, landing in LA at 6 PM and getting on the 7 AM flight the next day and getting back to work and just going to work and flying to Ireland. And then from Ireland to, you know, Washington, then Washington to a conference in LA, then home, just like gnarly stuff. And just remembering like we did that together and you had somebody that just was willing to do it with you. And so I think no matter what, whether that support group is a co-founder, is a spouse, is parents, a friend, a community, I think it can come in the forms of so many different things, but having someone that has your back, when you have bad days, you can get, you know, jump on a call with and just get through it, because the next day can be better and you can solve the problem again.
Yeah. I mean, another thing I talk about too is the more of those you go through, the more challenges that you just, they're just a challenge, right? They seem really big when you're living in it. But so many people at the beginning of the pandemic were saying to me, you know, like, you seem very calm. And I was super calm because I've been through all kinds of heavy things, you know, over the years, and been through the financial crisis, and, you know, been through, I've seen too much, right?
I remember the first legal email I got from another lawyer, and I was like, oh, our company's done. This is horrible. And then just got one yesterday, and it's like, it's not fun and it's not ideal. And we're not trying to put ourselves in those situations. But when they come, you just kind of get through it and figure it out, and it'll work out.
Yeah. No, definitely. And I think that that's the thing. Somebody was asking, actually a reporter was asking me, is that age or is that experiences? And I said, I don't know, maybe it's a little both, right? As you go along, I think more than anything, you start to appreciate things. And some of the stuff I talk about, even in the book, one story in particular got booted out of Starbucks. I mean, that was a bad day on the calendar. Like, you know, it was not good on the timeline. It was a super high point when we got in there and everything was trucking along and we were doing triple what we were supposed to be doing. And then we got bumped out of there. And I was like, wait, you can't do that. We're doing triple. And guess what? Yeah. They can, because it's their company.
They can do whatever they want.
And this is what I say to entrepreneurs all the time. I said, and that was 40% of my overall business. It almost tanked my company. But it's gone. Yep. And so today I don't put all of my eggs in someone else's basket. Go like that.
I've been there. Yep. I've been there where, you know, you have a week on whales, right? You got this one or two big whales. And there was a couple times where it's like, pump the brakes. We have to find other clients. We have to figure out how to diversify, because if one of those goes, this whole thing goes. And so it's like, it's being disciplined and looking and saying like, I gotta like quickly figure out how to diversify and make sure that we're not just gonna tank and put all of our eggs in this one basket
or just one influencer, right? You know, I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same theories. And so I think that, and oftentimes those opinions come when you've, I don't know, call it being burned or call it, you didn't see it coming or whatever it is.
I think even for like somebody's listening to this now and they're not necessarily an entrepreneur or think that they have the confidence or whatever. I think it's also just in your normal work life. It's not just getting the golden handcuffs and being the one place where it's like, oh, I can't leave now. I know the flow and I know the person. It's like constantly just pushing yourself and just learning more, even if you don't end up changing, and you're validating where you're at is exactly where you should be at, which is incredible. And I'm hoping everyone that's listening to this from the space station is thinking, I don't need to go anywhere else, but I wouldn't mind them talking to other people, interviewing other places, so that they're solidified that like, this is the best situation. This is where I can give my 100% and get it back. This is my career, my future, my everything. I would love for them to go validate that in other places and come back and figure that out. And I think if you're listening to this and you're not going to start your company, you have a microphone and try to set, like, even just wherever you're at, it's looking and saying, I need to learn more. I can do more, you know, and being willing to not just put all your eggs in that one basket, because guess what? I learned this recently and we learned it through the pandemic. Those aren't bulletproof. Those places aren't just always going to pay your check and always going to have your bills covered. No, like, you need to have a network. You need to have a place where you can diversify yourself and make a phone call when things get weird or tough, because you've already planted the seeds. And too often we just look and say, oh, Big Brother's going to pay for me, right? Whoever the owner of the company is, you know, Kara's going to just, Hint Water's always going to pay my check. I'm good. It's like, yes and no. If you put in and you can do, incredible, but have a network.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean change your job every 6 months and just, it just means after this podcast, go and reach out to a friend at another place and make sure that they know that you care and you're appreciative of them just as a friend. So when hard times hit, it's not like, now I'm ringing the phones. It's like, I've been ringing the phones forever. We're good friends. We're good. Hey, do you mind talking to your boss? You know, it's like having a strong network.
I think that's important. Do you know who Porter Gale is? She used to be the chief marketing officer at Virgin America, and she did all the purple lights. She's awesome. She wrote this book a few years ago called Your Network is Your Net Worth. And it's so I mean, it's, you know, that book has a long tail. Yeah.
No. We're right here.
Yeah.
We came from a LinkedIn message.
Yeah. It's like, well, and that's what I always say to people too, that I think in many ways, living in this virtual world that we're kind of in, most of us are in right now, it's just that, you know, if you don't know how to tap into the power of these social networks, whether it's LinkedIn or other places and actually connect with people, I think it's pretty easy to do it. And there are people that are doing it, and you can gain LinkedIn access to so many C-suite people. And
you can get to anybody.
Yeah.
Honest truth. You can. I sat down with Eric, the co-founder of LinkedIn, the first CTO. I'm like, I'm going to make it to somebody with LinkedIn just to say I met it, that I'm on the platform. Yeah. And I sat down with him in San Francisco in a coffee shop, like 2013. Right. And it's like, wait, what? I've talked to crazy executives, huge investors, by just being a real human and just not asking, hey, I need to get this or that from you. My message to you is just like, I love what you're doing and it's incredible. And then you validated and said, oh, I think what you're doing is incredible and it works. You know, I get obviously tons of messages every day that are just directly sales. I want to pitch you this and I got that. It's like, be a human, because you wouldn't want that coming into your inbox. Be a human. If it relates, everybody wins. It'll go somewhere. I think good people will give the time to everybody, meaning good people will go down the road because that's how they got where they were at, was by learning from every situation.
Yeah, and people want to learn. I think even sweet executives, you know, want to learn. Yes. And so if you actually are doing something that they're interested in, then put yourself out there to go and network. So this is absolutely awesome, Sean. I love it. Where can people find you? And on LinkedIn and
LinkedIn, hit me there. Yeah. Sean Holiday on LinkedIn is probably the best. Instagram, it's all the same. Twitter, everywhere, kind of all around. Spacestation.com is one of our exciting moments. I remember back in 2017 when we acquired that domain, we thought we were so cool getting spacestation.com. We always said, if the worst case, we'll just sell it to NASA or Elon and we should be able to recoup this whole entire expense.
Yeah, I love it. That's so great. So super. So everybody give Sean 5 stars and come back and see us every Monday and Wednesday with all kinds of cool, mostly founders and CEOs, but also every once in a while, just people with super relevant stuff that they're talking about that will apply to you. So thanks, everyone. Have a great week. Before we sign off, I want to talk to you about fear. People like to talk about fearless leaders, but achieving big goals isn't about fearlessness. Successful leaders recognize their fears and decide to deal with them head on in order to move forward. This is where my new book, Undaunted, comes in. This book is designed for anyone who wants to succeed in the face of fear, overcome doubts, and live a little undaunted. Order your copy today at undauntedthebook.com and learn how to look your doubts and doubters in the eye and achieve your dreams. For a limited time, you'll also receive a free case of Hint Water. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Send me a tweet at Kara Golden and let me know. And if you like what you heard, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Thanks for listening.